Welcome to Broadcast from the Blue Bench, a place of remembrance for all those lost to suicide or those who have lost loved ones to suicide. This is a series of podcasts about addressing suicide and breaking the stigma which surrounds it. It's about people who have lost loved ones and those who struggle with thoughts of taking their own life but have overcome their own personal battle. It also includes stories of those who have helped lead others who are struggling to a new path, enabling them to pull back from the brink. It's about shared personal battles and triumphs. Most of all, we hope the podcast will bring hope. The Blue Bench is situated alongside the River Wandle in Merton, overlooking a newly planted daffodil walk. It was chosen in memory of Mark, who was a police officer who sadly took his own life in 2021. Blue is also a colour often associated with sadness and unhappiness. 30,000 daffodil bulbs, including a number of highly fragrant, beautiful Rose of May, have been planted, which will then bloom and provide a place of peace to all those who pass, a place of reflection to remember loved ones lost to suicide. The bench will also have a QR code linked to the podcasts. It will also incorporate a weatherproof box containing informative leaflets, providing useful information on where to get the appropriate help. So today I'm talking to Marina Kim. Marina is the communications lead for public health at Merton Council. Marina, welcome to the Blue Bench. Would you like to discuss your own experience?
Hello. This subject is close to my heart because I attempted to take my life once many years ago and was close to doing it again in 2017. I took a pack of sleeping pills the first time round, and that's what I thought was the most gentle way to do it. I left a letter for my family and also called a close friend after I took them. That friend raised the alarm and effectively saved my life. I am glad that he did. The first time was due to a very toxic work colleague and a former lover who I had left months before and then, due to circumstances, had to work alongside them. It was a toxic situation and he got quite abusive towards me. At one point he threw a bin at me across the room, witnessed by others. On another occasion he threw everything off my desk and enjoyed himself watching me crawling on my knees on the floor, picking it all up, all while saying, "Oh, now this is a good girl." Subsequently he confessed to me that it turned him on to make me cry. So there were some erotic connotations to his aggressive behaviour. He sent me messages with pictures of bruised and beaten up naked women and said he wanted to do that to me. He would lure me in and throw me off, constantly playing with my emotions. I started to develop a Stockholm syndrome of some sort, where I got so dependent on his appraisal when he was nice to me that I closed my eyes and excused his abuse. I couldn't escape him as it meant quitting the job, which was not possible for me at that moment in time. I also felt nobody at work was standing up for me when I couldn't stand up for myself, and he did cross the line so many times. I'd say to everyone, if you see someone being mistreated, do not be afraid to interfere. Some people are being too nice, too English, and are scared to interfere, but they must. It can seem that a person is able to stand up for themselves, but they could be so far down the toxic rabbit hole so that they can only get out of it with support. I developed insomnia, flashbacks, I physically feared going to work, I feared him, and I also craved for his approval. So eventually, I was so grounded down that I broke, and I did what I did. The morning after, I had a good think about my life, and I realized I had to distance myself somehow from that guy. I started working from home more, and when we moved offices, he was unable to come as often as he did before, which allowed me to break from the chains with him. Years later, this guy who was so abusive towards me asked me whether I wanted to marry him. Obviously, I did not.
That's a very, very moving story. So you mentioned, though, that this was not the only time and that you were close to a suicide twice in your life. What happened the second time?
Yes, sadly, that's correct. The second time was because of a failed relationship. Let's call him Man B. I genuinely loved Man B. He was in the public eye and our relationship wasn't straightforward. It wasn't even a relationship per se, but a promise of one. Unlike man A from the previous example, this man B is actually a good man. We got caught up in this mess because initially he was trying to do the right thing towards everyone in the situation. He was involved with another woman, and I don't think he originally intended to get me involved to the extent that he did. We just had a very strong chemistry with each other and were physically and emotionally drawn towards one another. But he had another commitment and wanted to see it through before we could be together. He has not cheated, but the promise he's given me was a heavy burden for me to carry, because I wanted him right here, right now, and right here and right now was impossible for the time being. But he gave an indication when he would be free. However, I simply couldn't wait patiently, as I loved him, and for me, for a long time, I couldn't even look at anyone else. And I had a lot of attention from other men, but my mind, body, and soul fully belonged to him. And waiting for him to become available was a torture. Although I do know that he meant well and wanted to do the right thing towards all parties, it was just a very unfortunate and unlucky situation. He was also way, way too English to be bold and brave and confront the situation head on. Had I been him, I would have sat me down and had a sincere chat about it all, but he was too public school for that, and also he was high profile, and we were unable to speak openly about many things. A clash of our cultural backgrounds and mentalities also had a lot to do with some of our misunderstandings. I expected him to behave a certain way because that's what a man from my heritage and my cultural background would do, and he behaved in an opposite way, leaving me bewildered, as that's not what, in my view, a man should do in that situation, so it raised tensions between us. So imagine waiting for someone to become available, as they told you they would be, for them to then flirt with someone else. And that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me. To be honest, now when I look back, that woman was the one who made a move on him, and she was claiming he was in love with her. So I would say, in regards to that, I did overreact, and I got jealous and convinced that he was planning to sleep with her. And I demanded a confession from him in a series of emails, which annoyed him. And I crossed the line with those emails, as I wouldn't take his denial for an answer. I was just convinced that he was involved with her somehow. And at that point, I was already so distraught, so broken, and I was crying every day, several times a day. I felt completely betrayed, and I really needed help at that point. I feel I needed kindness and a hug. I need a conversation. I needed for him just to sit me down and talk to me gently about it all. But that's not what he did. When I was in the most vulnerable state, he complained to the police about those emails, and that's what pushed me towards contemplating a suicide. The pain was just too much to bear, and I was very, very close to doing it, as I was on the way to fulfill what I decided to do. But on the way there, I've heard suddenly out of the window of a house a tune for Ferrelis by Beethoven that my mom used to play a lot on her piano when I was little. That took my mind back to the past when I was with my family and very happy. The thought about my family is what stopped me from doing anything with myself this time round. I suddenly realized that although the pain and the betrayal I felt was unbearable, it was tearing my heart and soul inside out. But if I commit a suicide, I would have simply passed on the pain I was feeling to my parents, who would never, never recover from it. It would destroy them. So that's what stopped me.
So it was your own feelings and strength that actually pulled you through. So why did you get to a stage twice where you actually considered taking your own life?
The decisions and thoughts like that don't appear out of the blue. At least for me, they didn't. They're a result of a lengthy process of many months, if not years, when you're grinded down so much by usually the same issue that seems so unsurpassable that you can't keep going anymore. That issue becomes your life, and it's just either you win or it does.
And did you resort to finding any help?
Yes, but when a friend brought me nearly by force to the GP, this was when I lived in Lambeth, they said the waiting list was nearly half a year, and the quickest I could be seen, even though I was in crisis, is in 2 months, and that was obviously pointless.
Absolutely. So it was your own feelings and strength that actually pulled you through?
I'd say yes, and talking to a couple of close friends was also helpful to release some of the trapped emotions. Also, writing helped me a lot, and painting. Quite often, this is a cry for help. You want the person who is causing your pain to notice it, to show warmth. And frankly, I think this kindness by men be towards me would have helped. I wouldn't have broken down as much as I did if he just showed some kindness to me and talked it through with me. But if you can't get someone's attention, do not go through with killing yourself. Because the truth is that the person on whose altar you want to sacrifice yourself might be sad for a day on learning the news of your anguish, but their own instinct of self-preservation would not allow them to dwell upon it for too long, and they will move on. It's just not worth ending your life for your beloved's 5 minutes of regret. It is much better to live the best of your life, to flourish and to achieve things. That's what is going to make the other person regret losing you more than you killing yourself for them.
And now you've moved on. And where are you now with your life?
I'm doing well. I mean, I can't say that life is perfect right now. There are always things that need to be resolved and situations that can unbalance you. My biggest joy at the moment is that I am pregnant. I always wanted to be a mum, and I'm glad that this magic happened for me.
That's a wonderful thing. Do you ever have thoughts like you had before? And if you do, do you recognise them coming, and then do you take remedial action?
Yes, I do occasionally have thoughts of not wanting to leave. But the difference is that now I've learned to control them. I acknowledge them and I take the edge off them by having a conversation with someone close to me or with a therapist. I also remember the truth that everything passes and this too will pass. I'm not going to feel sad forever. The joy will come. Life is so short anyway. I will get a chance to die at some point and I might as well see what else is around the corner. Worth remembering that nobody else's life is perfect. Even if it may seem that way, everyone has their own struggles. In everyone's life, good and bad, positive and negative alternate. So emotionally, I just wait for a bad period of my life to pass, sit it out, so to say, whilst taking active steps to change what I can and not worry about what I cannot. I also found writing, even as like a short story with fictional characters or a poem, helps with perspective and to take it out of your mind in a creative way. It's a therapy of some sort. Painting helps, meditation helps. There are a lot of good YouTube videos out there, and also nature. That's actually a critical point for me. Like, nature is super important. I love long walks on my own and with friends. I love being among the trees, so any green spaces, especially with as few people as possible, or sitting on a sandy beach at the seaside. Doesn't have to be Caribbean, could be a beach in Dorset, and just sitting there, listen to the waves, is very relaxing and calming.
So now, in a month's time, you're going to have a little boy to look after. How do you think that's going to change the way you look at life? You have a new life coming, someone to love and to hug, and who's going to love and hug you back. Is that going to make such a big difference to you?
Yes, absolutely. I do feel already I'm responsible for his life, and so I cannot be selfish. It has to be more about him, especially the fragile years of his life. I would definitely be devoted and dedicated to him and do everything I can to safeguard him from the troubles of this world for as long as I can. But it's a greatest joy. For years I've wanted to have a child, and so it's magical how it happened to me, suddenly. So that's very exciting.
So you're going to have somebody to share those long nature walks with, or sitting on the beach with, building sandcastles with your new little man.
Yeah, that's a good one. My friend said this is going to be the most important man in your life, and that's actually very true. And yes, I believe I'll never be alone again.
Marina, thank you so much for talking to me, and do keep in touch. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Jackie Carr. This series of podcasts is about two very special ladies. Wendy Walker and Jane Upson. Wendy Walker lost her son Mark to suicide. Mark is Jane's nephew. A series of podcasts is about them addressing their grief and making something very positive out of something that could be incredibly negative. The two of them together have networked, contacted groups, contacted people, and Broadcast from the Blue Bench has been a journey for me as well. I've spoken to some wonderful people who have opened their hearts to me about the impact suicide has had on their lives, directly or indirectly. And I can't thank them enough for their honesty and their kindness, but also for the wonderful things they bring to the podcast, which will enlighten other people into how to cope if they ever found themselves in a terrible situation of having to face a suicide in the family or have to talk to somebody to try and persuade them that suicide wasn't their only option. It's about people. It's about talking. It's about people addressing their own grief if they've lost a loved one to suicide, their own situation where they've been close to somebody who had considered taking their own lives, and people, professional people, who have assisted people in preventing them taking their own lives. Without Wendy and Jane, this series wouldn't have been possible. And I thank both of them for allowing me to come on their journey with them. And I thank all the people who have contributed to these podcasts. Finally, I'd also like to thank the amazing Neil Long, who's been our right-hand man throughout the series and can be found on the airwaves on weekday mornings at Radio Jackie, and a frequent contributor to Men's Radio, which campaigns tirelessly for men's mental health. The conclusion that I've reached as a journalist, as a host to the podcast, is that if we can learn to talk about suicide, not put it under the carpet, address the issues, because talking is the most important issue. And as Wendy and Jane would say, if people talk, there is always, always hope.